We turn now to our exclusive CBS News investigation into sexual assault in the military. November is Veterans Month, when we honor the men and women who protect this country. But who is protecting them? Tonight, as part of our year-and-a-half-long investigation, we speak to the parents of a soldier who say military leaders failed their daughter, that those failures ultimately led to her death.
I still cry every day. My mind's always on Nicole. I turn one corner, there she is. I turn another corner, there she is.
Steve and Stacy Burnham say their daughter, Army Private Second Class Nicole Burnham, was sexually assaulted in June of 2017, within 2 months of arriving at Camp Casey in South Korea.
There was an incident involving multiple male soldiers. We know that she was held down against her will. We know that there were pictures taken.
2 months later, she was sexually assaulted a second time. Nicole requested an expedited transfer back to the United States, far away from her assailant.
It took them 82 days to get her out of South Korea. I don't know what part of expedited is 82 days. And I would say, who is there to help you? There has to be somebody you can go to. No, there's nobody here, Mom. Please stop asking.
While Nicole was waiting in South Korea for nearly 3 months to transfer, she faced harassment for reporting her assaults. Official witness statements say Nicole was called a whore, slut, and deserving of rape, and that the verbal harassment led to feelings of ostracism and self-isolation.
The Army can deploy thousands and thousands of troops during a war situation within 24 hours, and they can't expedite our daughter off a base after two sexual assaults.
Unable to leave South Korea, Nicole became suicidal. Her direct supervisor knew, but failed to report her suicidal ideation up the chain of command, even though it was a mandatory reporting requirement.
How do you think she felt about how the military responded to her when she reported these assaults?
I'm sure she was scared to death. I'm assuming, like, this is not what I expected. I signed on the dotted line to serve and protect my country. And who is here to help me and protect me?
A few weeks before Christmas, Steve and Stacy welcomed their daughter home.
Even at home, when she came home, in her bedroom, she locked the door and pushed a dresser up against it. And it was like, Nicole, you're home. She's like, you don't understand.
2 weeks later, Nicole had to report to her new assignment in Colorado.
When Nicole got to Fort Carson, did her command know that she had been a victim of sexual assault?
No, that was not communicated to them.
And it was supposed to have been communicated.
Yes.
Again, just another complete failure of the Army.
A month after Nicole arrived at her new base, she got a call from Camp Casey.
She'd gotten that call like, you may have to go back to Korea and testify.
I don't think she could do it. I don't think she wanted to do it.
The next morning, Nicole was found dead in her barracks room. She died by suicide.
We have a report from the military, and the very last paragraph says that they didn't think she was mentally sound at the time of her death due to multiple sexual assaults and systemic harassment over a substantial period of time.
According to the military?
According to the military. They knew this, and they did nothing until they sent us home a flag-draped coffin.
We are all thinking about the Burnhams and thank them for sharing Nicole's story. The Army declined our request for an interview, but they said in a statement that their thoughts and prayers go out to the Burnham family. They say the Army's Criminal Investigation Command conducted a full investigation into Nicole Burnham's case and took appropriate action against the reported perpetrator. Our four-part investigative series on sexual assault in the military continues tomorrow. I'll be on CBS this morning at 7 a.m. And then tomorrow night on the evening news, you'll hear from survivors in their own words.
Thank you. Hello, this is Mark. I write a weekly newspaper column about true crime, unsolved homicides, and the paranormal. You can find links to my social media accounts and columns on my website titled themarkhobb.com. Welcome to the Catch My Killer podcast, and thank you for listening. Before I get into this week's episode, I would like to ask for your help. I'm looking for listeners to help support the podcast by buying me a cup of coffee. If you would like to help support the podcast, I'm asking you to subscribe to my monthly Crime Coffee Club, which is only $5 per month. If you subscribe to my monthly coffee fund, I will share exclusive content with you. To support the podcast, please visit catchmykiller.com and click on the donate link or on the buy me a coffee link. And that's enough of the coffee business. This week's story is a little different. It doesn't involve an actual homicide or a missing person. It's actually a story about a young woman from Minnesota who once had a zest for life. She had dreams of attending college and finding true love. It's a dream that many of us have. This week, I'm going to share the story of a young woman who reached her breaking point and decided that she no longer had anything to live for. She reached out for help many times, but instead of receiving kindness, support, and compassion, she was met with disdain and even hatred. This young woman chose to end her life in 2018, just shortly after her birthday. Nicole Burnham wanted to pursue a career after she graduated from high school. She joined the National Guard and then went active duty and became a full-time soldier. Although her parents weren't happy with their daughter's decision, they still supported her. Her mother said that her joining the military would be the worst decision that she had ever made. Private Nicole Burnham was sent to Camp Casey in South Korea on April 15th, 2017. Her experience in South Korea would not be a positive experience. After an incident that left her with a severed finger, she was then sexually assaulted. Nicole's mother shared bits of information about her daughter through the Army's investigation into Nicole's assault. In June, shortly after arriving in Korea, a group of fellow soldiers held Nicole down, assaulted her, and then took photos of her. Nicole's mother told me that it wasn't an actual rape, but pretty damn close. She would also be sexually harassed nonstop by a group of the same four or five male soldiers. One asked her to have a three-way sexual encounter with him and his wife. Another soldier asked her when it was going to be his turn to get a piece of that. And then there was another incident that involved the soldier shoving a wrench into her rectum with so much force that it actually ripped her pants. She also reported this incident and got the soldier to admit to it by recording him admitting to what he had done. Nicole requested an immediate transfer back to the States. She was terrified and felt alienated. She told her mother that she had felt lonely and that she had become an outcast after telling on her abusers. Nicole said that people just avoided her and didn't speak to her. She wouldn't end up having to wait 82 days before she could return back to the States. When Nicole got home, she asked her mom to place a lock on her door so that she could padlock it shut at night. She also kept a dresser in front of her door to keep anyone from entering. Her mother said, "Nicole, you're at home. This isn't necessary." She said, "Mom, you don't understand." Her mother left it at that. She knew to let well enough alone. I'm dedicating this episode to Vanessa Guillen, Lavina Johnson, Nicole Burnham, Kamisha Block, and the countless lives of women in the military who have been sexually assaulted, harassed, victimized, shunned, and vilified. Every year, millions of parents across the country send their daughters to the military. When doing so, they expect their daughters to be treated as professionals and equals. Unfortunately, this is not what happens. These young women are preyed upon by male soldiers for their own sexual gratification, and it does happen. I spent time in the Army Reserves and the Indiana National Guard. I have personally seen women get sexually harassed, but this was during the late 80s and early 90s. I had always assumed that the military had cleaned this up and made amends. From what I've learned, I was wrong, dead wrong. The military has to do better and protect our female soldiers. They are worthy of respect, kindness, and compassion. These women will leave the military and become leaders, mothers, and mentors. I feel especially passionate about this because my mother, my Aunt Sue, who is my dad's sister, grandmother, and my former mother-in-law are four of the strongest women I have ever known. They have all molded me into the person that I am today. Kindness, compassion, and love doesn't cost a thing. For this week's story, I spoke to Stacy Burnham, who is the mother of Nicole Burnham, the young 21-year-old soldier who left us too early. After being sexually harassed and tormented, she felt like killing herself was the only way out of her nightmare inflicted upon her by her fellow soldiers in the United States Army.
Nicole was born December 30th of 96 in Anoka, Minnesota, where she was raised and where she graduated. She's the youngest of three children. She had two older brothers, and they're all 2.5 years apart. So I had children in 92, 94, and 96. Like I said, she was born and raised here in Anoka, went, through elementary, middle, and high school. She was the manager for the high school football team for 4 years, a job she absolutely loved. Nicole was super organized. She thrived on organization. One of the things she liked about the Army, the structure of being told where to be, when, what to wear, what time to eat, which you would never know by looking at her bedroom or in her car because it was complete chaos. But for school, she was great at planning events. She was super organized. And so, like I said, she loved her job as a football manager. Some of the football coaches, the high school football coach and the assistant coaches, were like father figures to her. They were also teachers in the high school, and they had great relationships. So Kyle and her went to high school a couple years together. Ryan probably was graduated by the time she got to the high school because they're 5 years apart. She was also the lacrosse goalie for the high school. So she started in JV and then moved up to the varsity and then was the backup until, I think, part of her junior and then her senior year, she was the high school lacrosse goalie. Football and being the manager was her claim to fame. She loved it. We had chickens, and one of her chickens died. One day, the high school team bought her new chickens, and she photoshopped a picture of her chicken into the high school yearbook. Her junior year, she asked the boys' lacrosse team if she could put a picture of her chicken. And she was so proud. It got through the editors and ended up being a big deal. She then could not be on the yearbook committee her senior year. And it forced the yearbook committee that you had to sign a waiver that you would not Photoshop anything into pictures for the yearbook. So at the time, they made a big deal out of it. But she also took a lot of pride in our high school. Our high school football team had a scholarship. There was a young gentleman, his name was Dylan Witchin, and he died of cancer when he was 16 years old, and he was a football player, and his parents created a scholarship. Dylan wore the number 7, so his parents gave scholarships to 7 football players that displayed 7 characteristics, and I can't remember them off the top of my head, but they had to submit a written paper. And her senior year, she just asked, can I, as a female, as the manager, apply for the scholarship? That had never been done. And the committee said, well, sure. And so she was granted one of the scholarships. She was the first girl to win one of the Dylan Witchin scholarships, which she was very proud of, and her family was proud of that. The military was never on her radar. She was actually accepted to UW-Stout into their pre-med biochemistry department. I even still have the text message that she texted me that she had got in, and that was her plan. And it wasn't until her senior year, a recruiter in her lunchroom had her come over and talk. They're like, do you want a paid education? Do you want to travel the world? And she was like, no, I'm going to this. And then they were like, well, join the Guard. It's just 1 weekend a month, 2 weeks a year. You can still do that while you're in college, or you can defer that. They will let you defer your college for a year if you're joining the military. And so then she comes home out of the blue and says she's going to join the National Guard. And I was like, oh, no, wait a minute. I'm going to go down to the recruiting office with you because, again, it's right in our hometown. I said, I'm going to go down with you because I want to make sure they're painting you the right picture. So she then takes me down there. And, of course, they're saying, this. And I was drilling them. Yeah, but tell her, what about this? She's not guaranteed to be with a friend. She's not guaranteed one of the 3 places she put on her form. She's not guaranteed a glamorous duty station. And this was my knowledge. I'm like, what if she wants to get married? Are they guaranteed to be together? And they fired back with their answers. And at the end of the day, she was 18 and she wanted to sign. We were supportive of that. I mean, her grandpa was in the military. And so we were all supportive. So she graduated in June of 2015, left for basic in October of 2018, and went to Fort Jackson. Loved it. I mean, you know, it was funny. The first call I vividly remember, we hadn't talked in forever. And we had 5 minutes and we cried like 4 minutes and 30 seconds of it. It was like, we have to be able to talk. And, you know, really, she was like, I'm crying, but I do. I love it. I'm having fun. It's like, oh, great. And she got rave reviews from her drill sergeants. We all went down for her graduation, grandparents, her brothers. We drove from Minnesota. My mom drove up from Florida. And then on our way home, we made a little trip out of it. And she came home for Christmas that year, then left for AIT in, it must have been January of 2016. Went to Fort Lee, Virginia. And she was a 91F, which is a small arms ballistic missile repairer. That was her MOS. And again, loved it. Made some great friends. Wrote home about she loved it. We talked about it. Graduated, you know, with honors out of her class. We went to the graduation. We had wonderful remarks from her instructors, and we got to meet some of her friends. And then she came home because she was in the Guard. So she came home while then most of her friends went off to their duty station, and she was bummed. She was like, oh, I wish I would have went active duty, you know, and I was like, oh, you know. And then she went to her local community colleges, took some classes, went to her drill 1 weekend a month, 2 weeks a year. She only did her 1 weekend a month. She never even went to the 2 weeks. But after a few months, she did not really care for the college courses. And she's like, Mom, I want to go active duty. She says, I'm going to go down to the recruiting office and ask what I have to do. They explained to her that she had to fill out some paperwork and ask to be let out of her drill contract and join active duty. And the recruiter said, you know, it depends. He says, the guy could be nice and do it, and he could be a jerk and say, no, you signed this, and you're ours for however many years. But she also kind of liked the Marines, so she signed up to try to go active duty with the Marines, but because she had this big tattoo on the back of her calf, they told her she had to get a tattoo waiver. She thought, that's not going to go through. I'm just going to do the Army. So the paperwork went through for the Army. The Guard released her, and it wasn't like a week later she got her tattoo waiver from the Marines, and she was a little bummed. But she continued on down the active duty Army. She was told in about December of 2016 she was getting out of her contract. February 14th, 2017 was her official first active duty date in the Army, and she was told she was going to Camp Casey, South Korea. And she was actually super excited. As a parent, hated it. And I was like, Korea. Camp Casey, I read about it. I read there was way more men than women. It was in this Area 1, what I read to be dangerous. But this is what she wanted to do, and I supported her. And she left April 15th. So she then went to Fort Leonard Wood to do some in-processing. And we went and visited her the weekend before she left for Camp Casey, and she left April 15th of 2017. In May, I can't remember the exact date, but she was injured working with Katusas. I think they're Koreans that work with the United States military. And they were working on a 50 cal with a Katusa, and something got loaded wrong, and she was like, stop, I've got to release this, and the hammer is going to trigger, and it ended up severing the tip. Well, the first knuckle of her ring finger on her left hand. I got a call from my son. He's like, have you heard from Nicole? And it's like midnight. I'm like, no, why? And he's like, well, I don't know, but she sent me this picture, and it looks like her finger floating in a bowl of ice. And she says, fingerless Friday. And I'm like, what? He's like, well, she could be joking. And probably like a half an hour later, I get a call from her, and she's groggy. And she's like, Mom, fingerless Friday. And I got my finger cut off and I'm going into surgery and they're going to reattach it. And I'm like, do I need to get on a plane? She's like, no, Mom, it's just a finger. I'll be fine. When this happened, and as blood was spewing all over, whoever she was with said, call 911. And they're like, well, there isn't 911 here. And they wrapped it in this gauze and took her to the medical building. And she's like, my finger is gone. They're part of my finger. And they didn't believe her. So when they unwrapped the gauze, they're like, your finger's gone. And they had to send somebody back to find the tip of her finger. So they took her to a civilian hospital in Weijianbu and they reattached it. They did a really good job. About 70% of it lived. She had a little chunk of it that didn't live. It kind of looked like a dog had bit off a tip of part of her finger. But she spent like 3 weeks in a hospital there. And she got out and struggled with some pain. She said she would always explain the pain feels like not in her finger, but it feels like outside of her finger, which I guess is common. So that happened in May. And then in June, she had her first sexual assault. She did file a restricted report. She did not tell anybody about it. She didn't tell me and her dad, my husband. She did tell her brothers and then my daughter-in-law and swore them to secrecy. And I don't remember if she told them right away or if it wasn't until after the second assault, but they had known about it and they did not tell us because they were siblings and I'm sure they shared things they didn't tell us. And now, of course, it's something my boys will feel guilty about for the rest of their lives. But evidently, she told them she was held down, pictures were taken, stuff was done to her. It wasn't a Watwa rape, but it was pretty close, and that's what she told them. She reported it as a restricted report, meaning I'm not going to name the name. I'm only reporting it. This is what I'm told of a restricted report. You're reporting it so you have access to health care and mental health treatment. But she didn't name names, and she wasn't pressing charges.
Why did she not press charges?
I don't know. I'm guessing she was scared. She was a 20-year-old in a foreign country. This is a male, and this is coming from the CID. And when they interviewed them, they provided a sworn statement in late September, early October, and said that he had a private message with Private Burnham, and it's redacted, stated that after he and blank asked Private Burnham if everything was okay, her eyes began getting teary, and she related that people in the unit were verbally harassing her. He states that there were 4 or 5 males in the unit that were consistently asking her questions that were explicit and sexual in nature. He was asked if she would have a 3-way with me and my wife by one male. When is it my turn to get a piece of that by another male? She was called a slut and a whore and a homewrecker. This person recommended that she call military family life counselor to help release some of the stress and cope with the problems she was experiencing. Whoever this was stated he did not follow up with sending her there because she denied the recommendation. Again, it's redacted, stated after the conversation he had with Private Burnham. Again, it's redacted, and himself. So two people went to the commander to ask if an internal brigade move was possible for her, and the commander came back saying that was negative due to an open investigation for sexual harassment, a sharp complaint. I just have pages and pages of sworn statements of people knowing she was, people talking behind her back when she would walk by, males, would make these comments. So it was very well known and nobody did anything. I think that was the beginning of it. In September, there was another assault. She was in the motor pool and standing on one of their military vehicles, and evidently her platoon leader was inside the vehicle, and Nicole was leaning inside the passenger window having a conversation, and somebody walked by and stuck a wrench up her butt to the point where it ripped her pants with such force. Nicole then evidently stopped the conversation, and the person in the vehicle was like, what? And I don't think at that point in time Nicole said anything. She did file an unrestricted report for that. She did name the name and press charges. And in our last conversation with CID, they said Nicole did her own investigation. She got an app, a messaging type app. And she got this person to admit to this and took all of this information when she filed her report. Then it started to spiral. She lived in the same barracks. This person, they had a restraining order this person. Nicole was walking out of the building. There was some glass on the door, and this person came up behind her to scare her, and Nicole saw him in the reflection, so she stopped and was like, "What are you doing?" And, you know, evidently some people told him, you know, stop, just leave her alone. And at one point in time, she moved into an NCO suite with an NCO, so she was out of the barracks, and that person she lived with, and again, this isn't a sworn statement, this person she lived with lied, saying she had guys coming over all the time, and we later then found out that was a complete lie because she did not want Nicole living with her. And then after that, she filed that unrestricted report. She named her name. I'm going to press these charges. She also filed an EVT to get an expedited victim transfer to get out of the country. And those are only approved if there is a legitimate charge. And this is what I'm told, that if there's a legitimate charge and there will be a case going to a court martial. There was. So it has to be approved in 72 hours, and it was. And then the military language is gray, and they say most expedited victims transfer should take place in 30 days. Well, it took them 82 days to get Nicole out of Korea. And it was just one excuse after another, one being the commander didn't want her to leave because he thought it was in her best interest to protect her and keep her there. There was just issues at Human Resource Command because of the set complaint. Her file was flagged and they didn't know how to remove the flag. I kept asking her, who is there to help you? What is taking so long? And it, you know, mom, nobody, there's nobody here, stop asking. And then she kind of tapered off in communicating because she was like, please don't ask me. When I know something, I will tell you. So I kind of backed off. And she admitted to me that she had lost a lot of weight, that her hair was thinning and falling out. And I was, sometimes I'd talk to her, it'd be night for me. And I'm like, aren't you working? She's like, no, I don't go into work much. And I said, well, don't they care there? She's like, no, everyone just leaves me alone here. Not many people talk to me. And I was like, oh, okay. And it's kind of conflicting from what we get from her, because we finally got to meet with her commander after a few years and help from our senator and another advocacy group that we work with, and humiliating them via Twitter. We'd asked, our senator had asked for this meeting the meeting happened in April, but it was probably December of last year, and we never got an answer, and it wasn't until we publicly humiliated Mumford on Twitter on a Friday night, and on a Saturday morning, I got a call from Fort Carson saying they'd like to meet with us. So they did send, I mean, that was one of her commanders, and they did send the commander from Fort Carson, but they were innocent. So by the time they got her out of Camp Casey, after 82 days of waiting, she got to come home. She had lost a lot of weight. She was right. Her hair was thin and short and falling out. But she came home. I picked her up from the airport, and she immediately wanted to go see friends. She did that. The biggest thing I noticed at home is she asked for a lock on her bedroom door, and she would put her dresser in front of it at night. And I'm like, Nicole, you're at home. And she would say, Mom, you don't understand. And I would say, you're right, I don't. You know, hindsight, I wish I would have asked and talked about it more, but when I would bring it up, she would be like, I'm home. I don't want to talk about it, Mom. I'm going to Fort Carson. She also suffered harassment from military wives. So evidently, Nicole was in a relationship with a soldier over there. And, well, I'm not even going to say they're in a relationship because this person was an NCO, and I think he preyed on her. I don't know how it all went down. They were both punished. Evidently, they were out one night. He took her to her room and stayed there to care for her, and they broke curfew. So they were both punished. They were both given Article 15s and lost rank. They must have had some type of relationship, and he had taken some pictures of Nicole, and he says that it was with her consent. He then shared those pictures with a soldier who shares an account with his wife. So when she got on the laptop, she saw these pictures of Nicole and then assumed Nicole was sending them, started harassing Nicole. And Nicole's like, I don't know what you're talking about. I've never given pictures to your husband. I don't hang out with your husband. Well, that kind of got around where then she was being harassed by other wives. And she posted some of that the night before she took her life. She actually went to the commanders and asked what she could do if she is being harassed.
So just to clarify, all of the harassment originally started in Korea, and then it eventually would follow her to Fort Carson. Is that correct?
It started at Camp Casey. And okay. It continued. She would change her name. She would change her account. And they were just relentless. And it continued over to Fort Carson. But this is a sworn statement from her first sergeant in Camp Casey, South Korea. I'm not sure of the date, but at one point, Private Burnham did come and talk to myself and the commander and showed us texts between her and Mrs. and it's redacted. Private Burnham came to me and the commander and asked, what can I do if I'm being harassed? We asked what she was talking about, and she showed us pictures of text messages between her and Mrs. Blank. And Mrs. Blank was asking her to stay away from her husband, and Burnham responded, you need to talk to your husband because I don't know who you are. Private Burnham left the office, and we called Specialist Blank in and informed him of the text messages. The commander and I also told Specialist Blank that he needed to let his wife know that although she is not in the Army, she is harassing Private Burnham, and Private Burnham could file a complaint against her, and she would be in a lot of trouble. So instead of giving Nicole advice, they know she's being harassed, go to the guy and say, hey, tell your wife to back off, or she could be in trouble. I trusted them with my daughter's life. I remember when she was going to go to college and thinking, oh my God, college and parties and drunk boys. And then I remember she's going to the military and I was relieved. I remember thinking, she's not going to go to any of these parties. She is going to the United States Army where people are going to have her back. And I felt so safe and secure.
Please allow me to be brutally honest here. When recruiters talk to your children, they will say anything to get them to enlist. But once they get in, the recruiters are out of it. And I'm telling you that it's not a safe place for women, the military, because a lot of these men, I mean, we're talking about young, sexually promiscuous, hormone-raged guys. And then when they see these young, attractive girls, and a lot of them will act like Neanderthals. And I'm telling you this from my own personal experience where I saw this sort of thing. And I saw a lot of married men messing around with these young girls and also pursuing them. And the thing is, if you get to a point where you file some kind of a complaint, they're going to find out. Everyone is going to find out. And then what's going to happen is they're going to retaliate against you, just like what happened to your daughter. So there's nobody that's really going to protect you because it just doesn't work that way. I feel like women are looked at as second-class citizens in the military. They're not respected. They're not treated as equals. And a lot of these men have the attitudes that women should be barefoot, pregnant, and in the kitchen making a sandwich, not serving in the military. It's a man's world, and the macho bullshit is real. And I mean, it's nice that Vanessa Guillen's mother and politicians, I mean, I've seen the photo shoots of them are standing together, talking about passing this law and that law, protecting women and all that. And let me tell you something. Excuse my language, but it's not going to change a goddamn thing because women are still going to go in there. They're still going to get raped. They're not going to say anything. And they're just going to keep their mouths shut and move on because they know when you're in there in the situation and you know, and you're familiar with everything like your daughter was, you know you're going to be retaliated against if you say anything because that's just how it is. And again, that's your daughter knew this. For anybody out there listening to this, if you send your daughters into the military, then be prepared for them to be treated the same way that Nicole Burnham was treated, sexually harassed, guys making comments. It happens. You know, you take a look at Vanessa Guillen or what happened to Lavina Johnson. These aren't isolated incidents. They happen all the time. These women are just the ones that you hear about. But think about all the ones that go on that you don't ever hear about. And I'm going to make a bold statement right here. You put me in a base right now and let me have a conversation with 50 female soldiers. I don't care who picks them out. I mean, whoever wants to pick them can pick them. Let me talk to all 50 of these women and reassure them that they can talk to me in confidence and anything they tell me is not going to leave the room. And then let me ask them if they've ever been raped, sexually harassed, had lewd comments made to them about their bodies. And I guarantee you that out of the 50, probably 49 of them are going to say, yes, that's happened to me. So what can be done about it? I really don't know. Unless you can change the attitudes that men have towards women, then not much is going to change because men look at women as sexual objects, and that has to change. But I'm not so sure that any amount of education or reprimands is going to really help there, because this has been going on since the dawn of time. And you know, these upper rank and NCOs, well, they do it too. They're probably even worse. So it's not just privates doing this. You have senior ranking NCOs, master sergeants involved in this type of treatment of women. These older sergeants will take advantage of these young 19-year-olds that don't know anything when they come in. To these guys, these women are just basically pieces of meat. And I know this sounds absolutely terrible, but it's the truth. That's how it goes. And you have documentation about your daughter from the military, and you've lived it. So you know what I'm saying here is absolutely true.
This is hard to talk about. Do I like to admit that my daughter let some guy take pictures of her? So then there was some suicidal ideation that went unreported. And I'm reading right out of her 15-6. So this is what the Army investigators found when they did the investigation. This is where this is coming from. Specific suicidal ideation was made to Specialist Blank, Captain Blank, in October of 2017. This was also not reported to the company command team, but was known by Sergeant Blank, Private Burnham's platoon sergeant, was her direct supervisor. Burnham stated she could not take it anymore and crying. She was escorted to Blank and handed off to, she was escorted to Captain whoever and handed off to the same, the captain, he's a chaplain, I guess. The chaplain did not report the suicidal ideation to, again, it's CPT or LTC, due to Private Burnham's request not to involve them. The incident was not reported as a mandatory reporting requirement through the chain of command to the 2nd ID Division Commander. Suicidal ideations require a serious incident report to the Division's Tactical Operations Center within 3 hours and also our wake-up criteria for the 2ID Chief of Staff. This failure to report hindered the visibility of the suicidal ideation by commanders at the company, battalion, brigade, and division levels, preventing more accurate assessment of her emotional state. When they sat down with us, they literally said, you know, Burnham, I don't know how this happened, but your daughter fell through every crack. Really? You don't know how it happened. But you hand me this book of all this. I mean, you don't know how it happened. I can highlight how it happened.
I can tell you how it happened and what happened. There were several people that knew what was going on with your daughter, and yet no one stood up for her. No one offered to help her, truly offered to help her and get her out of a dangerous situation. Too many people failed your daughter.
Then what happens is, through the cooperation of Camp Casey, CID was able to examine the canvassing interviews of the 70th HSC 70th BSB that indicated approximately 15 soldiers were aware that Private Burnham received text or Facebook messages from wives of soldiers. The details of these statements are part of an ongoing CID investigation. So yes, people knew. There is evidence to assert that Private Burnham experienced verbal harassment and was subjected to derogatory statement and was the target of gossip and inappropriate conversation. This environment, coupled with her embarrassment and lack of trust in her chain command, cultivated a feeling of ostracism and subsequent self-isolation. The company command team did not discuss nor recommend the moving of Private, the person who she reported, outside of the 70th BSB due to their assumption that Burnham's expedited transfer would complete quickly. Then it talks about the standard operating procedures. One required action by commanders following a report of sexual assault is to determine the best course of action for separating the victim and the subject during the investigation. This is required to set conditions as an environment to support good order and discipline, as well as to support the safety and well-being of the victim. There is no evidence that a reassignment or temporary location of private blank was discussed as a viable option to further separate him and Burnham. So a military protective order was issued to remain 25 feet away. However, the MPO stated that the distance requirement did not apply to the company or battalion formations, nor when passing in the company or battalion area due to space restrictions. This was not a concern of the company commander nor battalion commander. However, it does indicate that leadership was aware that the service members would inevitably come into contact. So why even go through the paper of a military protective order when it's not good at formation or in the building where they live or work?
It's just a useless piece of paper.
Yeah, the limited separation was illustrated on or about October 16th of 2017 when Private Blank allegedly jumped out to scare and intimidate Private Burnham as she was exiting the barracks. Captain Whoever collected statements from witnesses and made the decision to move Private Burnham from the building to this other barracks building approximately 150 meters away. It's just line after line of failures, and I have pages and pages of witness statements. So she comes home, her time's up here, she's got to report to Fort Carson. Of course, my mom wants to call Fort Carson and say she's not coming because she's going through some stuff, but I can't do that. So she goes to Fort Carson. She leaves like December 28th of 2017, and she drives there. And then me and her dad were driving the next day down because we were going to spend, because it was her 21st birthday on December 30th, and it was New Year's, and she was in a new place. And she had to report to base. It was like on a Friday, but then she had Saturday, Sunday, Monday off, which was like the 30th, the 31st, and the 1st, I think. So we were going to drive down and spend the weekend with her. So that's what we did. We got an Airbnb. She was there, and she met us. She took us on post and showed us the PX and her in-processing building. We went out and did her birthday, went for her Mexican food that she wanted. We're together on New Year's. We did Garden of the Gods, Pike's Peak, I think. I can't remember what it was. Did all the sightseeing stuff you can do around there. On this January 1st, we did one last trip to Target where I stocked her up on everything a mom stocks their kid up on, shampoo, soap, toilet paper. Give her a hug. She wanted to go back to base that night because she had to report in the morning. You know, give her a hug, tell her goodbye, and that was the last time we saw her alive. We had communication with her from everything we were hearing or everything we've read. She was adapting. She reported where she needed to be. She met all of her new people, got her barrack. Now, this is like January 2nd of 2018, and she died on January 26th. So she doesn't have a lot of time there, but the gaining command at Fort Carson should have been notified of the inbound expedited victims transfer, but was not. The initial explanation provided by 2ID includes a possible combination of misunderstanding and misinterpretations. So when an expedited victims transfer is approved, notification depends on whether there's an open case and a continuation of service. And while Burnham's case was still open, she departed Korea. Private whatever court-martial was pending. She was receiving behavioral health care and support from, I think it's her SVC, her victims unit. So for whatever reason, they dropped the ball on that, and Fort Carson doesn't know she's an EVT transfer in. She does report herself to behavioral health, from what we're told, and we have some paperwork, and she goes to all of her appointments. She goes to an appointment on January 23rd, I believe it is, and makes an appointment for the next week. She rates low on all the suicide questions they ask. We know that it was on or about the 23rd of January she was contacted that she would have to go back to testify in Korea for the court-martial. We also find out after she's gone, this is not until July, that the person, her NCO, who claims way back in Korea when he, you know, I think he was ultimately the very first perpetrator. He's married and has another girlfriend. He comes to visit Nicole at Fort Carson. He is from Sacramento. He flies her to Sacramento. They drive from Sacramento back to Fort Carson together. They hang out together, and he is the last person to see her alive. Now, he claims, he tells Nicole, he's going out, coming back, because ironically, he has a girlfriend in Minnesota, where we are from. He claims, he tells Nicole that he's leaving from there and going to see his girlfriend in Minnesota, and Nicole was upset. Ultimately, I'm not finding any of this out until months later. But I'm in Atlanta working. My husband is in Dallas. I wake up on the morning of January 26th of 2018. I wake up and I have a message from this person. His name is Derek, and he tells me he's worried about Nicole. Can I call her? It's 5 a.m. where I am. I said, well, it's 3 a.m. where she is. I'll try. So it's 3 a.m. I explain this, and I'm like, I don't understand. Why are you worried about her? And he's like, well, she had heard some stuff people were saying about her in Korea. I'm like, oh. And so I go to my work, and a couple hours have passed. I keep trying to call her, and I can't get a hold of her. Do you think I should go out there? Do you think she would have hurt herself? And he's like, I think so. I think she might have, and I think you should go out there.
So who exactly is Derek?
He was the specialist. He was an NCO, not necessarily her NCO, but they had met there. He's the one that came to her room after they had been out one night. And then evidently they had some relationship, but they had both gotten in trouble for it. And I think they each had restraining orders against each other, I guess, which is what I'm told is normal. So they're not supposed to have contact with each other. Anyways, she leaves the country. Well, let me back up. While she was home, she got this bouquet of roses. I mean, it just said from Barbecue Grill. Who is that? Oh, that's just my friend in Korea, because it was her birthday. Well, I'm starting to put two and two together, and so the flowers were from him. But I don't know this person. Then I said, why do you think she would have hurt herself? Or what makes you think that? And he said, well, we were texting, and she said I wouldn't be hearing from her anymore. I call Fort Carson, ask them to do this welfare check. I get a hold of the police. They're like, why? So I relayed that on, and the police there were like, well, that doesn't mean anything. Maybe she's going out in the field. Maybe they just broke up. And then I'm like, listen, she's an expedited victims transfer. They're like, well, we don't even have her on our roster here. Are you sure she's not at Fort Collins? I'm like, no, she just got there. Okay, we'll check. Call us back. In the meantime, I call her dad. I call my sons. No one has heard from her, but she put these things on her social media account. Again, back and forth. Finally, my husband is calling her cell phone, and one of the military police answer it in her barracks and tell him there that she's dead. So that is how we were notified. So he then calls me. Then I tell Derek, oh my God, Derek, she's dead. Again, I don't know who this person really is. I'm assuming he's a friend. At this point in time, I'm thinking he's in Korea. And the very first thing he asked me was, no. And I said, yeah. And he said, can you tell me where she was and how it happened? Well, I don't even know. It's still an active investigation. Then a little later in our conversation, he said, was she in her room? And I was like, yeah, she was in her room. Then he tells me that he is on his way to Minnesota. And I'm like, wow, I'm thinking, you're leaving Korea to come to Minnesota? You must really be a friend. I'm like, well, I'm coming. My girlfriend is. And I was like, oh, well, then over this course, he never straight up told me he had been with Nicole. So I was thinking he, as a friend, was coming from Korea, when no, that is not how it happened. Upon investigation, his wife in California didn't know that he was even in the country or what he was doing in the country. Again, we have some, what is this? Due to, where is this one? So unfortunately, due to a breach in protocol in securing the scene, an improper casualty notification resulted. We found out that the daughter was deceased the same morning of the incident and before proper procedures could be executed through the casualty assistance office. And then the next paragraph says, Notification was inadvertently made due to the improper handling of evidence at the crime scene. No less than 3 first responders touched Private Burnham's cellular phone, which is in direct violation of the Fort Carson crime scene response evidence. Training states do not touch or move anything unless is necessary to ensure the safety of personnel. So they actually talk about contaminating the crime scene. So they admitted to contaminating the crime scene. So then I scour through it. Things just don't make sense to me. I don't really understand it. I start talking with some other moms that this has happened to. You know, their daughters have, you know, taken their lives. And this one mom turns me on to Amy Frank of Never Alone. So I reach out to Amy and say, you know, this is whatever. And ironically, Amy was working in D.C. when my daughter's first congressional complaint came through. And she vividly remembers, I don't remember the lady's name, though, kind of saying, well, we wouldn't have known if this girl would have killed herself, if the sexual assaults had anything to do with it or not. But I met with Amy in private time. We spent a whole weekend going over all of this. And then I've kind of turned to them for some help, and they have been instrumental in helping us get that second meeting, get some other, helping me with these FOIA requests. And we finally got the meeting in April, and they sent out a couple JAGs, the CID person, the commander at Carson, one of the commanders that was at Camp Casey, who now works at the Pentagon in the Office of Personnel and Readiness. We were told that he had got a letter of reprimand, but evidently that doesn't matter and you go on to get promoted. But I specifically asked the CID agent because I got pictures back and I never read anything about, and I'm not, people are going to think I'm crazy. Like, I don't want to admit my daughter killed herself. And I've come to terms with that. I've grieved the fact that my daughter took her life. And as I read all this, I don't see a picture of a chair. They don't mention any of this. So I straight up asked the CID agent. I said, was there a chair? And she's like, well, no, there wasn't. There's a desk chair, but it wasn't by where, you know, she hung herself. I'm like, well, then how did she get off the ground? I'm not, because she hung herself with a military belt. They sent us this little diagram. And they were like, well, the best we can tell, it was a tiptoe situation. I said, so my daughter got on her tiptoes and like jumped into a noose and ends up suspended a few inches off the ground without it. And maybe that happens. It just, to me, sounds weird, and I don't know. But that is why there is a part of me, that's why I go with murder by suicide, because it probably is a suicide, but to me, the Army murdered her.
Well, the way that I look at it, your daughter and Vanessa Guillen, for instance, they'd still be alive today had they not joined the military. They'd be doing their thing, having careers, going to college, getting married, whatever. But they both died because they went into the military. And they weren't killed by foreign enemies. They were killed by things that happened to them here involving their fellow American soldiers. You send your kids to the military and you expect them to be protected and cared for. But that's just not what happens. I feel like the military fails so many families, and they certainly failed yours, because again, had she not joined the military, she'd probably still be alive today. And that's got to be something really hard for your family to have to accept and live with, especially since you were against her joining in the first place.
Let this be the biggest life lessons to her quote-unquote battle buddies, if that's what they're called, or other soldiers. I mean, part of me completely understands they are all young. They're 19, they're 20. They probably learn that, shit, look what they're doing to her. If I start speaking up, if I'm on Burnham's side, if I start speaking up for her, that's going to happen to me. I'm sure they all turned a blind eye, and they were probably scared to death. But at the same time, look what happened. And they could have prevented it. They could have helped her. I hope they all walk away with that. I still talk to some of them. I'm going to be honest, I'm very guarded because I don't know. I know there's some names I very much know. There are a couple that I don't know. Not that I fully 100% trust, but her NCO did come to her funeral, and I don't know. At first, I thought she was being supportive, and part of me was like, I think that was maybe just for her own benefit, or I don't know, and I hate to say that, but I now have a wall up. I'm guarded about who I talk to. I used to plaster a lot of stuff on social media, and I don't do that anymore. I know the names of the wives, and some of them have daughters of their own now. And I just wonder what they would think, how they treated my daughter, if somebody treated their daughter like that.
So my last question that I would have for you is, based on your experience of having a daughter that went to the military and then would unfortunately end up taking her life because of what happened to her, what type of advice would you have for anyone that's considering sending one of their daughters off to the military right now? What would you tell their parents?
I would say don't do it. I cannot in good faith ever recommend it to anyone. It was the worst decision of my daughter's life. It has shattered our family. But if it is something that they have a child and they are adamant about doing, you be their advocate. If you think something's wrong, say something to someone. I now remember thinking, should I just go to the National Guard office here? Could they help me? I mean, probably not, but I wish I would have done something, or I wish I would have called my senator. I would have found an advocacy. I didn't know all of these groups online. I would have found an advocacy group online. If you think something's wrong, it probably is, and be their advocate. Do not stop. As mad as their kid might get at them, at least are still here and alive. I remember that day calling Fort Carson and thinking Nicole is going to be so mad at me. She's going to be at PT and someone's going to go looking for her because her mom called, and oh my gosh, she's going to be so mad at me. I almost didn't make the call because I thought, oh my gosh, no, she would never. It was never on my radar that she was struggling or that's what would happen to her. And it did. And here we are. And now there's a million things I wish I would have done, and I can't.
And that concludes the story of Private Nicole Burnham. Although Nicole's story was tragic, it could have been prevented. It would have only taken one person from Army leadership to step up and pick this battered young woman up from off the ground. But no one did this. Her superiors just passed the buck and kicked her down the road as if she were an empty beer can. Nicole's story should be shared with anyone considering sending their daughters to the military. Sexual harassment, rape, and assault of women in the military isn't isolated. It happens often. Unfortunately, it goes unreported, because most of these women know there are repercussions to reporting these incidents. They know they will be ostracized and their lives will become pure hell. If you are a female soldier enduring sexual harassment, please go to your superiors and demand a resolution. If that doesn't work, involve your family, friends, and politicians. And if you are contemplating suicide, I'm asking you to please not do this. Your life does matter. Although you may think it doesn't, you have family and friends out there who will suffer from a decision that you cannot come back from. Again, your life does matter. If you are in the military and considering suicide, please reach out for help. You can contact the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255. And if you are a parent, law enforcement official, friend, or relative seeking justice for an unsolved homicide case, please visit my website and complete the contact form, or contact me through Facebook. Thank you for listening.